Everybody, welcome to Crosshairs Radio, episode 19. If you're coming over here from Cyclocross today, welcome back. If you're not, you may want to head over to Cyclocross today and listen to what sadly is the last episode of Cyclocross today. We did about 13 minutes over there on that show, and then I invited everybody over here to Crosshairs Radio because we're going to continue doing the They Don't Do That in Europe segment and those shows that we had previously done on Cyclocross Today over on Crosshairs Radio. So even though that show is ending, which is a bummer, we're still going to be able to talk with Scott Diedenbach and David Palin and have them on Crosshairs Radio. And just to keep the format that, well, I'm used to, and I think all of you are who listened to Cyclocross Today consistent, I'm going to throw it over to Scott and let him take over the show, and I think we're going to talk about U.S. Nationals.
Man, this is a lot of pressure.
you can do this in your sleep. Now. You don't have to edit. That's the bonus part.
Well, yes. Welcome to back to Cross. What's the name of it? What's this?
Just go with They Don't Do That in Europe. They don't.
Okay, yeah. That was on purpose. They Don't Do That in Europe. For people that don't know what They Don't Do That in Europe is, it's just our name of the show where we talk about both American and European cyclocross. And we named the show They Don't Do That in Europe because we hear that a lot. We used to hear They Don't Do That in Europe all the time when people talk about U.S. cross, and we're like, no, they do. They do funny stuff in Europe.
So yeah, that's right. Some of the things they should.
Yeah, that's well, right. I mean, for instance, things like going to a U.S. course and there's a tree in the middle of the track, and you're like, well, they wouldn't do that in Europe. And then you see things like Zolder where they're, you know, riding through a forest.
Right. There's five trees in the course. Right. So, but for this episode, we're going to talk about U.S. CX Nats. I always like to put the U.S. in there because
I do too, and I think it is an appropriate. If you look at all my posts, on Twitter, I always say U.S. You know, and then hashtag CX Nats because it's not just our nationals, it's everyone's, and everybody uses the same language.
Yeah, yeah. We don't want those Canadians to be mad at us.
Yes.
No. Because otherwise they may not show up for the Pan Am Championship.
Right. So, guys, we had nationals in Asheville, North Carolina.
At the Biltmore, man.
Estate. That's where I wanted to start off. Venue. Guys, the only thing I want to say venue-wise is amazing.
Yeah.
What about you guys?
Yeah, it was impressive from the, you know, largest private residence that I didn't even get to. That is on the grounds. Yeah, my wife did as well. To we had our own little corner, this Antler Hill Village that is just a very small section of this estate that was amazing. You know, World Cup like features for this venue.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, this thing looked like a World Cup. I mean, it was the course looked like a World Cup, world class course. I think that course would stand up with anything in the world. And although, like you've said before, Bill, I've never been over to Europe, right? But I've seen a lot of them on TV. But just amazing. But I want to. So let's just really quickly. I got to say there were two little negatives. We'll get those out of the way. One, the drive back through the Biltmore property. If you had to do that every single day, that was a little bit of a drag, but not that big a deal. In fact, I think they did a good job of making people aware that this was something you were going to have to do leading into it. They almost made it sound worse than it actually was. So when you actually had to do it, you're like, well, this isn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. They made it sound a lot worse than that. And then the other thing I would say is, you know, the $15 fee, we're really not used to doing that here. And it did increase the cost for some people a little bit. But again, not a big deal, I don't think. And for what we got out of it, I think well worth it. What about you guys? David, go ahead.
I think that certainly played a big part of it, that it worked out well that way. The whole thing with the parking, you know, it became a non-issue as much as it was supposed to be an issue. And again, the venue was unbeatable. I think that the whole thing with the Bonk Breaker Hill there that I don't think got on the feed, but that section of course was kind of epic. and to the point where people that design courses here in the U.S. all commented on perhaps one of the best sections of cyclocross in the U.S. ever.
Yeah, Bill, what do you think?
Yeah, well, going back to the parking issue, I think there were a lot of factors and lack of communication that sort of built that up. And, you know, we all want to always use USA Cycling as sort of the whipping post for many of these issues. But it turns out that it was more the Biltmore that didn't want to tell anybody what the price was, and that's in their policy where they won't give away that pricing. And if you look at it, $15 over the week to get in there is pretty right. much equal to what we did see in other places at other nationals that all charged parking as well. So
yeah, true.
You know, I can see it if you're a team, you're definitely paying extra because you're paying right. for a team spot, and then you're also paying the $15 on top of that to get in. But if you're just a spectator, if you're just a rider who's, you know, supporting yourself, that's it, $15, and you are in for the week. As far as the distance, it was funny because I remember, you know, putting it into the GPS, you know, into Google Maps where we're going from the house we're staying at, and it was like a 20-minute drive. Yet yeah. we got to the gates of the Biltmore in like 10 minutes.
Right.
Yeah. <You know? laughs>
And it was the first time you did it, it was a little confusing figuring out exactly where to go. But yeah. again, it was all stuff.
Yeah. And everybody working there was amazing. And it really, by the end of the week, you know, I think the staff, there were no power plays on the part of the staff. Their job was to make sure everything went smoothly. So if you came in and you had a bike on there, it was almost like the honor code by the end of the week, where they weren't even checking to see that everybody had a bracelet or anything
right.
like that. They were yep. just pointing you towards the course, and you kept driving along.
Yeah. So we stayed there. We stayed in one of the Marriott chain hotels in town the first day, and we went down to the course. And my wife is like, you know, there's two, for people that don't know, there's two places you can actually rent like a hotel rooms. There's the inn on the hill and the other one down in the village. And my wife's like, they've got to still have a room. I'm like, you're crazy. No way. She's like, watch. She goes and gets us a room inside the Biltmore grounds for the rest of the time we were there.
Nice.
So then it all became a non-issue. I mean, we almost never left again.
Right.
We stayed right there. There was places to eat. And this is another thing I want to touch on. The accommodations at this were the best ever food-wise. There was always coffee available all over the place with short lines that you didn't have to wait forever. Bathrooms when you needed them. Porta-johns in the pit. How many times, you guys, in the past, all the shows we've done, have I said the first race promoter... The first race promoter that puts a porta-john in the pit for the mechanics is going to, you know, I'm going to mention it. Here it is right here. It was so funny. I was talking to another mechanic when we were in the pit. We were pitting for Masters earlier in the week. And we were talking about, like, yeah, this is great. And as we're saying this, Micah Rice is walking down the middle of the pit. And we went over to him. We're like, dude, thanks so much. You know, this is so awesome that there's bathrooms in the pits. And he smiled. He's like, oh, cool. Yeah, I'm glad you guys like it. I said, you know what this means? He's like, what? I'm like, it means next year we're going to be hitting you up for food vendors in the pits. He's like, yeah, I believe that.
I'll tell you one thing. While we're singing their praises, there's one thing that I was talking to Wes about it, Bill. To me, there's one lost opportunity, and that is just any type of memorabilia. They didn't, and there was nothing in Austin. And
yeah, that's been the case for a while.
As much as I liked really going to the CX Hears tent and buying stuff from CX Hears and from Rolier, I still am wearing my Boulder 2014 cyclocross Nats hat and my scarf.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it certainly doesn't take away, but it certainly is a lost opportunity, I believe.
Yeah, and I want, you know, that's something that USA Cycling could probably, they're always trying to figure out revenue, and it's I believe that Nationals every year is a loss for them as far as money goes. So that's definitely something they should look
yep.
into to take advantage of that.
And I went over to the USA Cycling tent, and they were selling USA Cycling baseball caps.
Right.
Yeah.
They weren't even, you know, you would think maybe embroidered on the side it would say CX Nats. Nothing.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Missed opportunity.
I would buy one too. I agree. Yep. I think that would be cool. That would be.
Yeah, and you had mentioned Micah Rice before, who you talked to about the Port-a-Johns. He's the, for those who don't know, he is the vice president of national events, I believe is his title, for USA Cycling, the guy who's in charge of putting on all of these national championships. And the person, I think, when Jeremy Powers crossed the line on Sunday, not to give away any spoilers, to end out the national championships week, was the most relieved than anyone else there following for sure. What he had to deal with at Austin, because he really was the point person for anything negative that happened following the 2015 national championships.
Yeah, so we should make sure that we give them equal praises for a good job and a job well done that they did this year. And it's the best nationals I've ever been to by far. And I just really had a great time. Let's talk about the course a little bit. What do you guys think? I mean, great. The cask flyover, that thing was huge.
Yeah.
I mean, for a U.S. course. I mean, obviously, they've got bigger stuff than that in Europe. But that thing was awesome.
I will say on the broadcast, I told one of my buddies, Spencer Hackett, that I would call it a down over and never got the opportunity. So I will make up for that now, that it was, instead of a flyover, it was more of a down over. And it was amazing because it was enormous. Longest, you know, I know in Europe they have ones longer, but the longest U.S. Down over. Now I can't even say
over
it.
Over down more, right?
Fly over down over. That. Down, right? But the thing was, and why it's a down over is you didn't have to go up it at all. You came down this descent, went down this little dip, and then you still could carry as much speed as you wanted through the flyover. So people were just flying over the down over.
flying
over down over. There it is.
Yeah.
And you went under it twice.
Yeah. It's really kind of neat.
That's how long it was, right? Also, you know, the wooded section was great. The climbs were great. The course going through the barn was cool. I've mentioned the pit had the bathrooms, which was great, but it was also a very well designed pit area. Very flat. Both sides were very workable, with no like puddle spots or anything. Everything drained well. So a great pit design. And the other thing from the pit, you could see the majority of the course from the pit, so you could watch your riders and stuff, and it made that easy. So overall, A+, man. I couldn't give it higher marks.
Yeah, absolutely. So everything, the finish line and the pits and all of the vendors were down below, lowest point of elevation, and then up above for this whole background was a lot of the course. And two difficult run-ups, some really fun in the woods descents, huge wide courses in a lot of areas that we always talk about. That's a feature that we love because it gives riders the opportunity to choose their lines, and it didn't make it any easier, you know, that as we always say, confining riders into a really narrow chute doesn't make the course harder. A lot of times it just makes it more annoying.
Yeah. Yep. And less exciting to watch.
Yeah, and it takes away any decision-making. So if you find a better line, and that was a great thing, you could just go up throughout the week and stand in the entrance to those woods where that drop-off was and see all these different riders taking all of these different lines. And it changed throughout the week with the rain and then it getting drier. And you had guys like riding all the way to the top of the hill and then just bombing it down. You had others running. And it really led to the excitement that there were so many different options for many of the obstacles on the course.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Just like we said, I don't think we can say how great it was anymore, but let's talk about the races. Where do you guys want to start? I'm thinking we'll start with junior men.
All right.
Sounds good?
Great.
Sounds good.
So we had, you know, kind of heading into this battle, we had the expected battle between Gage Hecht and Spencer Petroff. And we obviously had Gage Hecht with the win. Spencer got fourth. Denzel Stevenson got second. And Eric Bruner got third. Comments? You guys want to?
What do you think the factor was in that race? I mean, you were you in the pits for that one?
Yes. So I was pitting, in case people don't know, Spencer rides for our team. I was pitting for Spencer. Actually, the way we had it set up is all season long, our head mechanic, Garrett, and Spencer's father, John, who's pitted for him his entire career, they were actually pitted for him all season long. I was like a backup person, a third person, a runner. There was mud at that point in the day, so we were like, okay, in case we need an extra runner. What it did is it gave us a chance to – Garrett and I would go to the power washer and I would just stand there and get sprayed while he's cleaning the bike. And I could, but then, you know, it was a one-sided washer. So like someone, if I wasn't there, he would have had to stop, you know, stand up there, turn the bike around, pick the washer back up. So I just stood waiting for him to get the one side done. And then I could flip the bike for him, and it made our wash a lot quicker. So that's really that, and trying to spot Spencer. But
how many? Yeah, I was gonna say how many exchanges during that race
for Spencer. I think we did two. I think I'm pretty sure for Spencer. Which, in my opinion, one of the deciding points in the race was there was a spot where Gage came in, did a bike exchange. Spencer did not, and I think that following lap, Gage actually put some time into Spencer. So I think. That might have been a little bit of a oversight there. Maybe he should have come in and got a clean bike at that point, and maybe he would have stayed with Gage. I think Gage's day. I think Gage would have been tough to beat that day, but I think maybe Spencer could have stayed with him a little bit more had he changed that same time, the bikes that same time, instead of riding with the slightly heavier bike with the mud on it. But, you know, the kid rode his heart out. He rode as hard as he could, and he's... He's going to be ready for Worlds. Let me just say that.
So, yeah.
It was.
Yeah. And props to Stevenson and Bruner, too, for getting second and third. I mean, they, you know, that's.
Yeah, that Boulder Junior team is really coming on strong.
I don't want to take anything away from them. Absolutely. They certainly deserved that second and third spot that they got. So, really good ride by both of them, too. So,
it's interesting with the amount of bike changes and how you're saying that it made a difference, which, yeah, absolutely. Agree with, because it was really heavy mud in that morning. And as we work through the rest of this race, is when we get to the women's race, I don't think Katie Compton took a bike the whole race.
No.
Yeah, it got better. I was pitting for Amanda Nauman. She did one. I think she got one bike the whole time. I got to tell a story too, since we're talking about that. She comes in, and Amanda is the greatest ever, and we'll talk more about her, but she comes in. I'm catching for her because I've never, you know, pitted for her before, so I didn't want to be the bike thrower. And she comes in, she pitches off her bike to me and says, "Thank you." Like, and so David Sheik and I were in the pits after she cleared and was through and we got the bike cleaned. I said to him, I'm like, "She actually took breath enough to say thank you to me." He's like, "I know, I heard that."
That's hilarious.
So I told her afterwards, I'm like, "Next time, save that one breath. I don't care. It's okay. I'd rather have you have that one breath for the race." She's like, "I know. I just do it all the time."
We'll assume you're thankful.
Right?
Yeah.
She is just awesome. We'll get to the women's race because I got more stories about being in the pit for that. So, all right. Well, anything else with the men's junior race that you guys that caught your attention? That you want to mention?
Just
Caleb
that.
Schwartz got seventh. You know, he's only a 17-year-old. So, you know, we're going to see him with something next year, I think.
Just the change in conditions in those earlier races with the junior races, especially what would happen is the start would happen. They'd go out and back. And when they came back, it was up to the bike barn. And there was a pretty severe off camber in front of that before they went through the barn. In the later races, although, you know, we'll talk about the U23s where it was a factor, but in the later races, it was really more of a non-factor. Everybody was riding as smoothly. When I first got there at 8 a.m. that morning, it was unrideable.
Yeah.
Everybody was really sliding down, and everybody was just picking the points that they were going to dismount on that low line and then run. And it was a factor to really break up the race in those early races because people were sliding down the hill or everybody was just lining up. So it got really spread out. So that it was interesting just to see where the key points of the course changed throughout the day, determining on how dry the course became.
And that's where I watched the junior race was on the upside of that off camber, looking down at it. And from lap to lap, that one changed from the first laps. Very few people, and part of that is the congestion. But to the final laps where the leaders were just riding it.
Yeah, and it was really windy too, and I think that that was a factor for that drying
that
off quickly.
Dry it out.
Yeah.
And it got windy quickly. I was there, Dave, we were there early in the morning. It was dead. Yep. No wind at all. I'm like, well, man, this is not going to be bad. And then within an hour, it was like, oh, my
goodness. Once that sun came up.
Yeah, the tents are being blown over. So
yeah, we had to take down the tent in mid-race there before it got blown over.
Right, right. So, all right, well, let's move on to the – we have a whole other category because we are treated with a women U23 race, which hopefully there will be more of those during the season next year. But we get that at Nationals, of course. Ellen Noble getting the dominant win. Sophia Gomez Villafane got second, with Emma White getting third. Laurel Rathburn, I'll just throw in there, getting fourth. I mean, basically, this is the Ellen Noble show, complete domination. What do you guys, I mean?
Well, certainly, props to her. But Sophia Gomez Villafane, man, I mean, I think going into it, if you had asked certainly me, this was Ellen Noble versus Emma White.
Sure, sure, yeah.
And to see Sophia up there, and she did a great job there.
Yeah, I think it really came down to the woods and right after this drop-in section. So if people haven't seen pictures of the course, there was this long stepped-off camber, and it actually had these different little steps to it, these ledges that the cows walk down when it's not. I mean, it's truly European. We were in a cow field. And you had to pick which step you wanted to ride across the off camber, and then you would make a hard left turn and drop off a shelf was about, you know, 2 or 3 feet. And there were lines through it so you could go down there, but still a really tricky section. You had about 10 to 15 feet once you dropped off that shelf where there was fencing, and you had to make a hard left-hand turn and then a hard right-hand turn and then, you know, make your way down this rooted dirt track. Going through that, Noble was leading during one of the earlier laps. Emma White, right on her wheel, and she, you know, she crashed. She went down and went down hard there, and that's where Noble got her gap and never gave it up. The interesting thing to watch in the laps after White crashed and Noble knew she had it was Noble with a mountain bike backgrounding, you know, that if anything, that was her strength, was the downhill, where White is just, you know, one of the most powerful women already in the world, which she showed with her silver medal in the time trial and on the road down in Richmond for Worlds, is that we would think that the flats and possibly the runs where she would be able to keep with her. After that, if you watch it, Noble would come to the hard, difficult sort of mountain bikey type section, and she was going so slowly. It was actually sort of cool because she knew she had to win, and all she, you know, for the last couple laps, she just didn't want to screw up that part. So she was just gingerly making her way down that little drop off and through it. And then you see Emma White behind her, and it was like she was the mountain biker. She was just bombing it. I mean, she would make that turn and it was like no brakes and just go. And it was, and you know, and cleaned it every time, but it was just, you know, too much too late and couldn't make up that ground.
Yeah. So I mean, I thought it was a good U23 women's race. Again, it's an interesting category. I think it's going to get better and better. We're going to see more and more, you know, more and more talent as the girls start to like improve their skills in this category. I'm so glad that this is the first year that we have this category. Also, I just want to throw out there in 18th place for Women's CX Project, Kennedy Adams, 17 years old. She was our top finisher in that race. So well done, Kennedy. So.
Yeah, that's great. How many folks did you have in the racing from the CX Women's Project?
From Women's CX
Women's
Project?
Women's CX Project, excuse me.
We had Kennedy Adams, Mackenzie Green, CJ Karras. So we had three in that race. And then we had, and that was that. So, but wait till next year.
Ooh, the teaser.
All right, men U23. Again, coming into this, we had a lot of talk. Curtis White and Drew Dillman, kind of the two names that were going to be the favorites in this race. That was the battle we saw at the Pan Am race at DeVue, and that was the talk going in. But McTubbin comes in and just puts on a clinic. Tobin Ortenblad.
Spoiler.
Getting first place, second place, Curtis White, and third place, a guy I've been watching all year and I'm really excited about is Grant Elwood, writing out of the Yoga Glow tent. So, okay, so let's. I'm just going to say it right now. Yes, Drew's bike hit the ground. So that's what happened. Yeah, he was off camber on the right. His wheel slid out. He went down. His handlebar hit the ground. His rear derailleur dragged, and it just ripped ripped a big part of the drivetrain right off the frame.
Inadvertent Vermeersch.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And he had a long way to run.
That was prior to the barriers, right? I mean, he was running.
Oh, yeah, it was back in the woods.
Yeah. So he had to come back over that barrier section.
Right.
And where they then hit the pavement again.
Right.
And running on pavement is crazy.
Yeah.
And then he had to go an entire, it was like a half lap from the start finish line.
Yeah.
I mean, they say, you know, it's supposed to be in the middle of for the pits, but it wasn't the middle.
No.
He got off and had to run at the worst possible space.
Yeah.
And he still finished 13th.
Yeah. And it was funny, you know, you mentioned the running part. When he did finally make it back to pit one, he comes in. I had moved up to like the first stall in the pit and I had plenty of time. I didn't even have to hurry. And that's the first thing he said to me. He's like, dude, my feet are killing me.
I talked to him, Scott. And
why? Because I asked him, I'm like, do you know how to stop? You know, I don't want you to hurt your foot either. You know, create some blister, you know. And he's like, no. I'm going. I'm like, all right. And he went and he went. And yeah, and you know, still got 13th. So
that's amazing for running that much and still getting 13th is pretty darn impressive.
Yeah, I agree. So
and to have the determination to stay in it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, here's
that's
the kid
so impressive
his,
about
his
Drew.
Ticket is punched to go to Europe again if he chooses to.
Yep.
He earned himself three national championship jerseys already.
Yep.
In a race now he's clearly not going to win.
Right.
And yet he has the, you know, that pride and dignity or whatever you want to do or drive.
Right.
To not quit.
Well, I mean, I throw it out there. It's the same thing we saw on Saturday before the Pan Am Games at Kings, you know?
When right. No, that's what I was thinking, though, when he from like 60th or whatever he was.
Yeah, he rode through like 50 guys in a C1. Yeah.
Right.
You know, so
and
finished 10th. Yeah.
And it should be mentioned that he, earlier in the week, won the collegiate D1 race. So he got a national championship jersey for that race.
And the team relay.
And the team relay.
And the Omnium. So you had three jerseys.
Right.
That's crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And everybody's like, oh, it's too bad. It's like, well, you know.
he did okay.
Yeah.
He came home with more than most.
Plenty of laundry.
Which was a great, you know, and speaking, you know, the Division I collegiate race, he's, you know, he was very much expected to win that after winning it last year.
Right.
And he pretty handedly won that. And that was good to see. And then he anchored the relay and Emma Schwartz had kind of solidified that for Marion before Drew even got on the bike. But then he rode the anchored leg and finished it, got them the national championship, and I got the number plate off of his bike.
Nice, yeah.
As my souvenir.
Yeah, nice. But to finish out that race back at the front of the race between Ortenblad and White, Curtis White, you know, probably coming into this as the favorite. I mean, he's the name that most people know.
I agree.
Had a similar bad luck. He went down. It was that off camber near the bike barn. I think it was early on, like lap one, he went down and then was really playing catch up for a lot of that race. And, you know, Ortenblad just had a great day. Mistake-free and just a huge win for him.
And let's give Tobin credit, too, because this was a great race for him. But if you look back to the block three where these U23 Americans were over in Europe,
yes,
and you go look
absolutely.
At some of Tobin's results, he did really well in block three in Europe. So
well, what was the one? There was
that
one race where
I
think he was eighth, and then Dillman and White were like 14th and 15th, like the last race that they did? Yeah.
Yeah, there was one race where he finished significantly higher than both Curtis and Drew. So, you know, we got to give it up to Tobin, too, I think. And, you know, it's his last year as a U23, just like it was Drew. So I'm glad that if Drew couldn't win it, that Tobin did. Kurt, you know, I like Curtis too. He's a great guy. I really like Curtis. Curtis has another year as a U-23 though. So
right, man, looking at him, you wouldn't think that kid's a man.
Right, exactly. So, but yeah, overall, great race. Anything else you guys want to mention U-23 wise? Or are we good?
We're good.
I'm good there.
All right, so we're on to the elite women. Bill, I'm going to you with this one. Katie Compton, is she back this season? Is her season back in? Well, I mean, it probably was always on track. This was kind of like her plan, but is she peaking when she needs to heading into Worlds?
Yeah, I don't know if it was always as planned. I think that if you look at that article Neil Rogers wrote for Cycling Tips and just see where Katie was at earlier in the year. In fact, I had an interview with her where she at Cross Vegas, where she was more down than I've ever seen her since I've been covering cyclocross. And it's, and they did, you know, her and Mark said, look, we're taking this differently. It's going to be a different approach. But now knowing everything that she was going through for years, it seems like, but and especially this season, yeah, it's amazing that she's at the point where she is. And I think she's stronger than ever right now. You know, she showed that in Zolder and then coming back, racing against a super motivated and strong Georgia Gold, just, was Katie of old, was able to ride away from her and Aunt No at the end of that race. And really, I'm really looking at Katie Compton to do something at Worlds. This finally may be the year.
And that was a great battle that we had between Katie Compton and Georgia Gould too, wasn't it? I mean, they were like trading punches all the way around that course for pretty much the entire race and just made for a really cool spectacle to see.
And in so many ways, this course was built for that duel, right? With Georgia Gould, especially with her concentrating on Rio and the Olympic mountain biking, she has been really focused on mountain biking, which gave her all kinds of preparation for racing at Asheville.
Yeah, that's a good point on that course for sure.
Yeah, and they were switching spots at the front. It was interesting. One thing that we haven't mentioned yet is that there was a pro-only section that was put in for the elite races. And on paper, it didn't look like much. It did, though. Yeah.
I mean, it took out the chance that anyone was going to ride up that hill.
Right, absolutely.
And hey, go ahead, describe it. Sorry.
So you went through the bike barn, but then you went back around and around the barn, even at a lower elevation, and then up this really steep run-up that I was calling a climb-up because a lot of people were using their free hand to help them up this thing. This thing was super muddy. It was hard to get traction on. People were sliding down. You can see, you know, again, it only took you like 3-4 seconds to get up, so it wasn't a long feature. But so what made it pro only, at least for me, is if you put those other fields in there, it's just going to stop the race. You're going to get people just on top of each other and sliding back down, and that's not good racing. But for the pros, it really was the difference in some of these races, and I think that just through the laps that I saw, Katie Antineau was having a lot of problems with that section, and I think that she would lose a second or two every time through there and then have to play catch up, and that may have been some of her undoing to be able to stay up with that pair at the front.
Yeah, that section was just awesome. I think it was the highest point of the course too, wasn't it? I think it, like, that was the high point as far as, you know, the course went, if we're talking about the same thing.
No, we're talking
about the absolute lowest part.
Yeah. Oh!
So it went under, you know, below the below the bike, below the barn.
Yep. The other section I was thinking of, Bill, was they added a chicane in just before you got to the hill out on Bonk Breaker Hill out there.
Oh, yeah. After you go under the short flyover. The flyover, yeah.
And for the non-pros, it was a straight shot from the flyover right up that climb.
So you could
build
some momentum.
For the pros, they added a left-right that made it impossible to get a running shot at that climb.
Yeah. You had to either power up or run it, and that's what most people did. So.
Yeah.
Who else do we want to mention in that field? Katie Antoneau got third, Ellie Anderson fourth, Rachel Lloyd fifth. We got to mention Rebecca Ferringer, man. Amy D Foundation getting sixth place.
Awesome ride for her.
That's one of her best rides of the year. I mean, having your best ride at Nationals, that's just, that's what it's all about.
Oh, I'm not positive, but she did really well in C2s, but C1s, I got to imagine that was her best result for C1 and above.
Yeah, I think you're right. And then right behind her, our favorite, number seven, in seventh place, Amanda Nauman, the panda. I mean, I can't say enough about Amanda. She is just so cool. But I'm pitting for her. David Sheik asked me to help him out. I'm just like, yeah, no problem. I have my pit pass already and everything. And we're sitting there in pit one, and you know, we see the mass of riders from the start, and we're kind of watching them. You can't really tell anything. They go up through the start. Where the finish line was, they come around. We're just seeing this mass of riders. The first time we get a glimpse of them, Amanda's on the front leading out Katie Compton.
Right.
We're like, we look at each other like, holy crap. What happened? And she is just flying on the front of that group. We were, and he's like, yeah, I guess she got a good start.
Yeah. And I'm sure David, who's her coach, is probably equally saying, this is awesome. And what is she doing?
Yeah. He's equally like, this is awesome. And holy shit, she's in the lead.
Oh, just to back up one thing, because I think sometimes we use terminology that all our listeners may not know. When you say pit one, it's basically, for people that don't know, it's a double-sided pit. So the riders are supposed to be in the middle of the course. When they come through the first time after the start, that's denoted as pit one. And then when they go through the backside of the course and come through the second time, that's pit two. So if you hear that sort of shorthand, that's what that means.
Yeah, it's the same physical pit. It's just opposite sides. One is the first side they go through. The other is the second side they go through. So just a great race by Amanda, who is, by the way, on her way. I think she is in France now, ready to race the World Cup.
Yeah.
She will be on racing the World Cup this weekend for the U.S. How awesome is that? Either of you guys know where she finished last year at Nationals?
Yes, she was like between 15 and 20, I think.
34.
No, that's right, because that was like her huge – that was, you know, when I had her on the show, her whole thing was – that Nationals was not a priority. She didn't want to put that kind of all or nothing pressure on Nationals since she had such an awful experience. I mean, just awful, to the point that she wanted to quit cyclocross after Nationals last year.
Yeah.
Yep.
So nice improvement there.
Yeah. And the other thing that did for her is that I can't imagine just sort of the stress of having to deal with this and the potential to just be throwing money away. Is that if you are in the top 50 in the world, you are automatically eligible to race in the World Cup.
Right.
Correct.
We have such a strong U.S. women's contingent that if you are out of that top 50, you may not make the squad because there are not going to be enough spots left.
Right.
So,
and she was sitting where, 53rd as we entered?
Right. And if enough, so it's not even a decision that USA Cycling makes. So they get to make these choices if there are women, if there are enough slots not out of the top 50. But if everybody in the top 50 for the U.S. wants to go, there aren't any spots left. You're just out of luck. So Amanda is sitting right on that fence.
Yep.
She's, you know, 52, 53. She's 48, 49. And it changes week to week. So you can't plan. You can't say, I'm going to go to France. Let me buy my ticket because I'm in the top 50. It's an automatic. And if everybody in front of you decides that they want to go and you drop from 49th to 51st, you're out of luck.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you can't race. That happened. Didn't that happen to Arlie?
Happened to Arlie and Ellie Anderson.
Yeah.
Yeah. They both got pushed back like that. And they were already over there.
Right. Yep. Right. So they had already spent the money.
The money to get
and were there and just basically had a training camp in Belgium.
Yeah.
You know, so that she got seventh means it solidified her spot. That's a ton of points.
Yeah.
UCI points. That means that she is in the top 50 and, you know, can't get out of it. You know, the bummer part of it is she had such a strong end of the season and really, yeah, it's a hard argument to make because there are so many deserving women on the American side, but as far as a world spot goes, she definitely was in that conversation, but was told, you know, by USA Cycling that it's just not in the cards.
Yeah.
But regardless, you know, another from a new racer only a couple years ago to being in a World Cup this week is just unbelievable.
Yep, yeah. Good for her, man.
And we actually had for a Women's CX project, they had a team dinner on Friday night, and it was really cool. And David Sheik and Amanda were both gave little talks to the our development girls about race day preparation. So, yeah, big thanks. And you're going to see more to come, I think, with between Amanda and Women's CX project. So just putting that teaser out.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Well, anything else? Any other women that we want to mention?
I don't know if it's on our farewell to CX today, our cyclocross today, but props to Crystal Anthony. She had a great season out there. Disappointing race, I know, for her on the day, but quite the woman. I'm really, really happy to see her out there racing hard.
Let's also give a props to Meredith Miller riding her last cyclocross nationals. Yeah. We got to mention that. So.
Yep, and go out there on your social media sites and your video sites. Find that there's a video. I don't know if you guys have seen it of Arlie Kemmerer doing a.
Oh, I did see that. Plant. Yeah, wow.
And Meredith Miller.
Saw that, right?
I saw that. I was standing right there.
Yeah.
And Meredith Miller similarly went down there in that little section there that didn't look so bad, but it was grabbing people by the hubs and pulling them down.
Okay, well, let's move on to the men's race. Bill, you're going to have to be the leader on this one because I really didn't see much of this race. I was so busy, as crazy as it is. I didn't hardly even get to see any of this. Jeremy Powers getting first, Stephen Hyde second, and Logan Owen third. Not a big surprise that everybody was kind of picking those three. It was just some argument over the order, I think. But I think on the last Crosshairs Radio, Bill, you and I both picked Jeremy Powers, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting because I think that, you know, if you saw that Book of Cross, I may have mentioned this before, that he did. I look at Powers and you think this is a guy who this was his fourth national championship that he's won. He doesn't have anything to prove. Yet the fact that people are already putting in his eyes are already saying that, you know, he's beatable and that Hyde is, you know, already stepping into his shoes. He feels like he had something to prove. You know, he didn't like the way that Louisville was reported, that he somehow got destroyed, even though, you know, he lost in a sprint.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I think that he was as motivated for this race as he was for every other national championship before this to prove that he still was the man. And, you know, it was a close race, but he did just that. And I think that those guys are pretty equally matched. I still think that Powers is a little better all around.
Yeah, and, I agree.
And what it came down to, which is interesting because we didn't even mention this feature on there. There's so many great features on this course. And the barriers, to me, at first when I saw them there, almost an afterthought. Like we see enough World Cup and European courses that don't even put barriers in there.
Yes.
They don't need them. They're not necessary for the course. It's difficult enough. There are enough dismounts, which there were on this course, that you really don't need it. However, the placement of these barriers were key. They were on the last grassy stretch before the finish. And the finish was an uphill, slightly uphill, not great, but slightly uphill sprint finish. If you got over those barriers first, unless you did something wrong, you were going to win the race.
Yeah.
That's pretty much how it went.
Were tall barriers too.
Yeah, and they were too tall. They actually had to go in there and dig them out and make them so they were UCI legal. They were or USA Cycling legal as well. They were above 40 centimeters. Dug them out and put them down a little more. so tall that Owen and Hyde didn't even mess with riding them. Powers did, and he was able to get a little bit of a gap when those three were together every time over those barriers, and that really played out. It wasn't much of a sprint. If it's even a closer one, that's where he had the advantage, and really was, you know, that little time every lap, I think, really gave him an advantage.
Another guy, so Jonathan Page got fourth, but another guy we mentioned kind of as a wild card was Ryan Trebone getting seventh. Respectable based on, you know, the kind of health-wise not the greatest season for him, but to still get seventh, I'd say is respectable. What do you guys think?
And certainly given, I mean, where was he last year? He's recovering from an injury, and, you know, he's not one of the youngsters bouncing back quickly. But he wasn't out there. What was the expression he used on your show, Bill, about people that don't pedal as hard as they can?
I don't know why. You can repeat it.
Oh, no. It's a family show. We'll just call it soft pedal racing for now and let it go like that. He was racing his heart out, man, and yeah. Good for him.
Yeah, it's interesting if you saw on Ryan's Facebook page. He really laid it all out about a week or so ago, that this injury that David talked about that he had last season, pretty early on last season, really screwed him up. And he went through all of this rehab. He came back way too quick, hurt himself more trying to get back to racing. And it turned out in the end that there was something else going on that they finally figured out just recently, and he finally started feeling good, could pedal hard again without pain, and was getting back into shape. So an amazing result for him. And I think that before that, when he was still unable to race without pain, he was done. You know, he yeah. pretty much said at that point that this was going to be his last season. Who knows? You know, he got a world's nod, so that's awesome. So he'll be able to go back to Zolder and race in the world championships, and it's going to be amazing to see him there. He says he's not, you know, in that letter on Facebook, he didn't say he was retiring. We'll see what will happen after the season. He was really open at saying, look, you know, he loved Cannondale and cyclocrossworld.com and said that they were the best sponsors he could ever, you know, have. But he, as just like David said, he's not a young guy anymore, and he understands that they'll probably bring somebody else in to take his spot, so that ride's over. So it's really going to be interesting to see what happens with Ryan for next season.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. He's a wild card, like we said, for this race. I mean, we'll see what he does next season. I hope he's feeling better. I think he could still have a couple more years in him. If he wants to put in that effort and be an impact. I mean, for sure. I mean, look what Page has done late in his career.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. So,
and Trebone, for people that want to, Trebone's racing age right now is 35. So he is up there, but still got a couple more years. So, all right. Anybody want to mention anyone else men's race?
No, it was a good race. You know, it was another one. Logan Owen also, you know, we didn't really talk about him, but here's a guy who has never lost a national championship until this year.
His string of victories snapped, but not really unexpectedly.
No, right. But at the same time, he's still up there. And I don't know, some people sort of cringe at Logan being Logan. You know, he's telling the world he's a better climber than those guys and that he's faster, and I don't know. Yeah. That's sort of.
He's still young.
He's still young, but at the same time, you want to see a little bit of that fervor, yeah. I guess, you know, and it's yeah. it has worked for him so far. I have a feeling that we are not going to see Logan Owen around, but so much in the next couple of years at cyclocross.
Yeah, I think you could be right. I mean, the road is definitely, I think, his passion. I think he really likes the road. And speaking, I got to tell you, so I'm standing at one of the crosswalks to go out onto the course, and Logan Owen pulls up next to me waiting for the course to open. And, you know, we were just talking about the mud and the slickness. I look down, he's running file treads.
Yeah.
He's going out pre-riding on file treads just to get a feel for the course, you know, and get his lines down with file treads, and I'm sure, and then going to, you know, put out something with more of a mud tire later. So, yep.
Well,
That was kind of cool.
Figure it out, isn't it?
It's yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You definitely know where you're going to slip.
Yep. Yep. In fact, Chris Clinton from Challenge Tires was telling me a lot about that kind of stuff. So we might actually start looking for some new tires down the road, tread-wise, as far as, you know, I think that's kind of becoming the idea, as he was explaining to me, is learn the course. If you can ride the course on a file tread,
yep.
And then you put a Limus on, you know, that thing is going to hook up like crazy in the race. You're going to feel yep. like, you know.
That's a great tip. I never even thought about that. Yeah.
So I think that might be a trend that we see in the future, and I think Challenge is going to be meeting that trend, according to him, with some of the treads that they're thinking about right now. So as will other tire manufacturers, I'm sure. So, all right, guys, everybody should watch the World Cup this weekend, right, in France.
Yep.
Watch Amanda.
Good.
Go watch. Look for Amanda for sure.
Definitely. Yeah. because we really didn't talk about them. We didn't see it. I mean, I was a little bit a part of it, but we weren't able to really watch it. But definitely some feedback on the broadcast that happened and some technical glitches.
Yes, Bill, tell us
there.
About that.
All I will say is that having had the opportunity to peek around the other side of the curtain.
Welcome to my world, Bill.
Yeah, I would say that there were people who were giving everything that they had and going above and beyond the means that were given to them to try and have the best broadcast possible, and that it was almost amazing that what they pulled off went out compared to the some of the obstacles that may have been in their way.
That was such a political way to say that, Bill. I'm so proud of you. Speaking of that, too, hey, at some point you got to post a picture of us at Nationals wearing our regulator hats.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm just surprised
yeah.
I haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah, I have these photographers working overtime. That, yeah, I hope to have lots of stuff up. We had it was pretty awesome for me that all these guys want to do this, you know, from Bruce Buckley, who I do a ton of stuff with, and John Kavoris, and then Brett Rothmeyer all will be contributing photos, so it should be good.
Awesome.
Okay, gentlemen.
All right, guys.
I gotta get that paycheck. I got to work.
All right,
sounds
David
good.
Palin. We'll
sounds
see you later.
Good. I'll talk to you guys.
We'll talk again soon.
All right.
On the next edition of...
They don't do that in Europe via Crosshairs Radio.
All right.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. We'll see you.